Hello, everybody. Welcome to the AW360 podcast. My name is Warwick Godfrey. I'm VP of Industry Solutions at Braze. Today, we'll be discussing the role of technology, data, and teams and how they are shaping the future of marketing. As the rise of mobile and new emerging technologies transform the way customers interact with companies that they love, forward-looking brands are leveraging data, advanced marketing tech, and in-the-moment engagement strategies to speak to their customers more responsibly and more effectively. I'm delighted to chat today with one of Europe's leading growth experts, Janina Luca.
Thank you, Warwick.
Janina, why don't you give us a few words about yourself?
I have been focusing a lot of my time on how we can best service customer needs. For a long time, we've seen in digital broken experiences between the interactions that customers have before they come to a product and what they experience once they are in the product. I think a big part of that has been our structures and silo teams, but also how we can access and really deploy data to have a consistent view of what customers are doing or how they're interacting with our brand inside and outside our product. A big passion of mine has been really on connecting these experiences and shifting the mindset at different companies I worked at to be more customer focused. I've been very fortunate to be part of some great companies. I'm currently at Depop. I was at Skyscanner before, Just Eat, Expedia. And I think I've been very fortunate also of being there at really pivotal times for some of those brands and having a really first row seat as we were building some of the categories, but really evolving how we did marketing.
I want to start by asking you, so you've just joined Depop. How's it been so far?
It's been amazing. I would say it's been quite a ride, but I couldn't be loving it more. I really love the mission of the company. We're here to empower the next generation to transform fashion. And obviously, as you can imagine, this is very different from working in travel. That's a much more mature industry and food delivery. And a lot of the challenges and opportunities that we're seeing at Depop are really very unique. It's still early days, but being here at Depop today reminds me a lot of earlier days at some of my previous companies, where a lot of it was about really building the category. I think when people think of fashion, they don't necessarily think about resale, but we're fundamentally a resale platform. And our community comes to Depop to extend the life of millions of garments that otherwise might end up in a landfill. So it's about giving them more love and giving them another chance of life. We have 19 million registered users in over 147 countries, which obviously is a stat that many other companies could quote, and a lot of companies could quote even larger numbers than that. But I think that one of the really interesting things that caught my interest when I started talking to Depop last year was that 90% of our active users are under the age of 26. And this presents a unique opportunity for us as a brand and our community, but also meant that in my first month, I probably had to do a lot of reading and understanding and kind of review and user research to really connect with this generation and what they stand for. Generations that are really passionate about individuality, creativity, diversity, and sustainability, and how you behave as a brand, how you talk to them. And basically everything you do really needs to be aligned with their passions and values. At Depop, everyone has been really great, but there's so much to do. And I'm sure that it's the same story everywhere. I still haven't worked at a place where we have a limited number of resources, but the tricky thing is really to pick the right opportunity at the right time. I was fortunate enough that I started early February. So I came in when the quarter had already started and a lot of things were in flux. So I had to some extent the luxury of time, and now we're planning for Q2 and undergoing the brutal prioritization exercise of defining what are the right things to pick up. So it's been really, really interesting. I'm loving it for now.
So I know it's still early days. I'd really like to hear from you. What are the key differences that you've seen compared to potentially other companies that you've worked for in terms of team structure or process?
It's different. I think that one caveat that I would say why I'm saying it's different is Depop is the smallest company in terms of employees that I ever worked at. So the answer to some extent has to be yes, it's very different. Obviously, team structure and processes, when you work at Expedia that has over 20,000 employees, operates on a multi-brand ecosystem, offices all over the world, is quite different from the level of structure and organization that you need to have for 200 people. I'm really loving the team structure, but if I'm honest, it's a little bit of an afterthought for me. At Depop, we really come together and support each other in initiatives, regardless of which teams we belong to. And pretty much everything that we do is from functional. And we're still at that great size that we can really collaborate effectively in a natural way for right initiatives. I know that probably not everyone is familiar with Depop, but if you think of Airbnb, you have users that can be on both sides of the marketplace. So for one trip, you can be a guest, but you can also be hosting people in your house. Our platform is quite similar. So we have users that come to buy, others that come to sell. And we also have a community that is active on both sides of the marketplace. And sometimes they're buyers and sometimes they're sellers. And to give you an idea of magnitude, on the seller side, sellers have made more than $500 million since we started the company. And our top sellers earn as much as 6 figures annually. I was really blown away when I found out how much some of our top sellers make and like really how they can build a business. And we're empowering business owners through the platform. So this is a long story to come explain some of the work that we're doing for sellers. For example, right now we have 5 different teams working together on a cross-functional plan to make sure we maximize our efforts to really be there for our sellers. And the best thing that I'm seeing at Depop is that it's not necessarily coming from the top of anyone in the management team saying to the teams that they have to work together on this, but it's really the teams that are coming together and collaborating and supporting each other. Obviously, there's a lot of companies that have moved away from the traditional functional structure into more cross-functional work streams. But I think if I reflect back throughout the years, when I started working in e-commerce, it wasn't as much of a cross-functional world as it is now. And it's great to really see that the world is moving in that direction. When I'm seeing the cross-functional teams executed well, I think that the benefits massively outweigh kind of traditional functional units. The other part of your question was around process. And I think that that's the area where I think we could be doing a little more. And sometimes coming into a smaller company, I think, is one of the pieces that I'm like, oh, I miss the structure of a larger company. But obviously, being a startup, we have been growing super fast. And I think that it's only natural that sometimes our processes are growing with us, but are growing at a slower pace than the people that come in. So we're aware of this, and we're working on addressing some of the key processes to ensure that our kind of ability to execute can grow with us. One of the really interesting things is that in the leadership team, there's a few people that have joined in the last 3, 6, 12 months that have experience working at other medium and large companies, and they're bringing the best practices they've seen worked at other places and localizing them to the Depop culture and the Depop ecosystem. So I've seen in my last month and a half, 2 months at Depop, more processes being created, but also being mindful of what's the right level of process for Depop. I think that is always kind of the tricky part of where you find the right balance. There's obviously a happy medium between having too much process and killing creativity and not being able to jump at an opportunity, and equally having too little process and then really failing on the execution, especially when you're thinking about cross-functional execution.
What is your approach to building the right teams to operate growth technologies? And maybe you could give me a good example of the best setup that you've seen.
I think for me, it really comes down to finding the right people and finding the right chemistry within the team. So when it comes to people, I always try to focus on finding smart, data-driven, customer-centric thinkers that have really a passion for solving problems. And I'm a big believer that if you have the right mindset, then you can learn and tackle pretty much anything. So obviously, I'm a little bit biased, and probably a little bit of that thinking comes from my personal background. So to give you a sense, I have a relatively eclectic background. I haven't always been in e-commerce. So many years ago, I did my MBA and I majored in finance, and I was convinced that finance would be the thing. I went to work in a trading floor and I was there for quite a few years. But probably like 6 months into it, I knew it wasn't right for me, but I sticked around for a little bit longer. And I remember then thinking, okay, what is next for me? And I was really fortunate that a guy called Mike Lowry was at Expedia at the time. He was also a Wharton alum, and he really believed in me and connected me with his team. And I ended up getting a job in a new team that was being formed at Expedia that was working in super interesting and high visibility projects. But I remember the first few months, Jesus, that was really, really hard work. I remember going to meetings and people could be speaking a foreign language. I was writing down in a little notepad all the different terms that people were referring to. And then I would spend hours in Google search trying to figure out what they were talking about. I remember like they kept talking about APIs and I was wondering what on earth is an API. And some of them were super easy to find because they were industry terms. So you would go to Google and like you would find them, but others were very Expedia specific terms. And I was a little bit terrified of asking anyone for help. So I think I've come a long way from those days. I know what an API is now. But I think it's stories like this for me, and equally I've seen many other people coming from non-e-commerce background and really doing an amazing job in e-commerce. And equally people from e-commerce moving to other industries and doing a wonderful job there. That I think for me really is about emphasizing that people coming in have the right mindset, and then they can pretty much tackle anything. And then the second point for me is really about chemistry. I think it is incredibly important to hire people that complement each other, but equally that they can work together. At Skyscanner, I was fortunate enough that I was tasked with building the lifecycle marketing team. So we went from one person to more than 10 in less than a year. As you can imagine, I spent a big portion of my time interviewing, and I've met so many amazing candidates throughout that process. But sometimes we had to make relatively hard decisions of not hiring someone because that person wasn't necessarily bringing something new to the team or wouldn't necessarily fit well with the rest of the team. And I think that part of the reason why I talk about how they complement each other and how they work together is because so many times I've seen groups of people working in the same project or in the same function, but not necessarily operating as a unit or operating as a team. And when you see that change from having a group of ICs or a group of managers working on the same project to having a unit, a team that they're all really rowing together at the same kind of speed and then they're coordinated, the speed of execution, the quality of the output, it's so much better that I think really how people are going to click with each other is equally important. I have to admit that also a lot of the things I've learned from the teams I've had the honor of managing throughout the years, and I've learned so much from them. In a lot of cases, they show me ropes of new cultures, new ways of working, things I had to be aware of. They helped me grow as a manager, and also, so I think I have to be super thankful for them and also teaching me how to think about what's the right setup for teams, and having it seem work really well at some places has also given me the confidence to go and execute a similar model at other companies.
That's great. I loved what you said about learning new words as you join different teams or projects. I had an experience when I was heading marketing for a Middle East business called Souq.com, the largest marketplace in the Middle East. It was acquired by Amazon. And through that process, we had to basically learn how to be Amazon. And in that process, although I had been working in e-commerce for 15 years beforehand, I really had to relearn everything from the ground up again. Amazon had their own set of words for different types of measurements, different strategies. So it was a big vocabulary lesson for me, but one that I was very thankful to go through. And to your point, on each business that you're a part of or each project that you're a part of, it builds your own story and your own capabilities and lessons, and you make mistakes and you learn from them and you just get better as you go forward. So thank you for sharing that with me. Let's talk technology for a second. So there's been a huge evolution where technology decisions can either empower or disable teams and processes. So a few brands I speak to have older legacy cloud operated stacks, and they can't really change anything that that they need to change. They're almost held hostage to a poor infrastructure. So what do you look for when making technology investments?
That's a great question, and I think a much debated one. I think there's no right or wrong answer, and everyone goes with different guiding principles when making some of these decisions. I think that for me, the first thing is always thinking about the decision of buying versus build. And sometimes it comes down to, is this really core to your business? Is this a differentiating point that you really want to spend the resources and the budget to go ahead and build yourself? If it's not really a unique differentiating point for your business, then how do you go and understand what are the solutions out there that would fit your requirements? And then how do you really evaluate that from the outside? And I think that that's one of the points that I've seen not always do that well, in terms of it's hard to assess before you bring a tool on board if that tool is really going to be doing everything that you expect that tool to do. So in some of the places that I've worked at lately, we've been moving more to a trial period before. So we would still do an RFP and then do a trial period with that to validate a lot of our evaluation and only then move forward with that full integration. And I think that there are other factors that are really important once you decide that you want to buy if you're not building. And I think that one of the key questions is, what ecosystem does that tool belong to? A few years ago, when we were evaluating marketing tech stack that we wanted to bring on board at one of my previous companies, I think it was a period where Google's marketing stack was getting so integrated and covering so many needs that it really seemed like it was the only option if we wanted to have the same data flowing across different systems, if we wanted to have a tech stack that was efficient from a cost standpoint. However, with time, if I look at like the industry now, there are many great tools that emerge and really worked in building an integrated ecosystem that deliver very similar benefits with a lot of flexibility and broad real choice to the market. If you think about Braze, for example, you have invested in really building that ecosystem and partnering up with our top marketing technology solutions to be able to deliver on the vision of an integrated ecosystem. I think that to your point of older legacy stacks versus new stacks, flexibility and agility are also top of mind. At a previous company, we had an older legacy stack for one channel, and their ability to deliver new features and meet our evolving customer needs was just too slow. So I think a little bit the advantage of partnering up with newer technologies is that they are much more agile and they're really more open to feedback. They're really listening not only to their customers, but they're also in touch with the specific use cases that an industry can have or that the customers are experiencing. And they're much faster and willing to react to those evolving customer needs. And for me personally, and I know this might not necessarily be something that everyone looks at, but I look at the quality of the teams that you will work with during the integration and the operational phase. I think that ensuring that you have an aligned philosophy and a two-way relationship goes a really long way. You want to end up in a situation when you're really partnering up with those providers. And I think that that's one of the things that I admire the most of the Braze model. As you said before, I have been in a few companies that have Braze, and I've worked with different account managers, but I think the one common thread there is that they have all been equally dedicated to building a true partnership. And I think that when you find those partners, when you're doing technology decisions, when you find those technology partners that really want to partner up with you, that is a massive advantage.
You are one of the leading growth experts. It's largely underpinned by the technologies that you're building around you and building the right people, setting up the right teams and the right collaborations across departments. But there is the other side of growth, which is mentality or a DNA of iteration, innovation, and testing and experimentation, which becomes essential for proving growth hypotheses. So, you know, with that at the center of most growth strategies, how do you change a business to ingrain growth as a mindset in the DNA, not just for marketing or lifecycle, but for the whole company?
That's a really tricky one. And I think as we were talking before, all companies are slightly different. So I don't think there's a one size fits all, as all companies are different, and how you can successfully influence a culture changes so much in each organization. And I recently read a book from Ben Horowitz called What You Do Is Who You Are, which I highly recommend to anyone that is trying to build or evolve a business culture. And I've definitely picked a few tips that I'm trying to apply at Deepa. But from the book, and also having seen it in the past work really, really well, I think that one of the key things to drive that change is really to lead by example. So I personally try to always be very data-driven in my decisions, lay down the framework on how we want to think about an opportunity, and really commit on the trade-offs and the kind of unlocking points. I'm a lawyer by training, so my brain works in really weird ways, and I appreciate that not everyone thinks that way. But ultimately, if you show to people the benefits of being structured in your thinking, using a framework, letting data lead the way, test different ideas instead of assuming that whatever your idea is going to be the winning idea, I think other people will start seeing the impact and the benefit of thinking and behaving that way, and change will follow. I think that the one piece that I think is a little bit hard to balance with that kind of data-driven growth framework, growth mindset, is how to really keep creativity alive when we spend so much time looking at data to show us a path. I'm lucky enough that at Just Eat, I partnered up with Susan, who is an amazing superstar that was incredibly patient with me and showed me the ropes when it came to creative thinking and brand marketing. And at Depop, we also have an amazing team led by Peter that is super creative and really embraces our community and finds the right ways of connecting with the community. And I think a little bit we need to adapt, and the growth mindset is amazing and we should all embrace it, but we also need to be mindful that some of it is art and not science. And how do we find the balance between those two?
That's really interesting. And when we look across the Braze client base, we often find the outstanding campaigns that are run are often, you know, where creativity meets technology. And there's so many great examples where, you know, just because technology enables you to do things in an automated fashion, it doesn't necessarily divorce it from the need to be creative, because you still need to appeal to customers who tend to be led emotionally. So thank you for sharing that with me. Now more than ever, brands are placing retention at the center of their growth strategies. What advice do you have for our listeners today as you adapt the changes that are happening around your customers today?
I think that doing right by your customer is probably the most powerful retention strategy you can deploy, and probably the most authentic one too. Obviously, we're facing unprecedented times and really difficult times, but I've been touched to see many brands come out of this difficult time to really do right by their customers and their community. And that has come in the form of donations, setting up funds for their employees or casual workers, cancellation policies waived, so many different representations of human empathy and understanding that are also building that brand equity and are connecting with their community in an authentic way. For Depop specifically, I would say everything we do is in support of our customers and our community as a whole. Whether it's business as usual or in a time of need that we're seeing today in the world, we believe in the power of our community to help independent businesses, including Depop sellers, as we talked about. They're actually building businesses using our platform to continue to succeed even in times like this. We must really evolve with our community and constantly innovate on their behalf. And I think that that's one of the big things that we need to remember as brands, that we really have a responsibility towards our communities. And to the extent that we can continue to evolve with them, we will remain relevant and retain those customers.
Well, that's great. So I think we're at time. Janina, it was great that you were able to join us today, and thanks for the fruitful discussion around how to leverage data, build teams, and the importance of tech, that tech plays in creating brilliant customer engagement strategies and experiences. Also want to thank our viewers for listening today. Thank you, everyone. Please stay safe out there and look after each other.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening. And for more content just like this, visit advertisingweek360.com.